Welcome to episode 46 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. So it's spring. It's a rainy spring here in Massachusetts, but spring means one thing, at least in our family, and that was strawberry shortcake. This was a family favorite, but Booty has developed an excellent updated twist on our old family recipe. So, Booty, you want to take us through that?
Yes. Strawberry shortcake, so good. One of my fondest memories of childhood was having that wonderful farmer's market strawberries. Ugh, just so good.
With the warm homemade biscuits.
Now, our mom, hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
I think she used to use the Bisquick recipe for the biscuits.
Yeah, maybe we should talk about the biscuits a little bit because I think you're right. She used Bisquick, which we didn't have a problem with.
No, but it's so much better and frankly, not that hard. We've talked about biscuits before. I don't remember which episode, but that was actually invented by someone who was a chef on a train and he wanted to make biscuits really quickly. So he mixed the flour and baking soda and everything together. And this guy asked for biscuits, kind of, and they were like, yeah, sure, we can do that really quickly. And so he came up with the Bisquick that you can buy and you can still get, or just make a good biscuit. I have my version is online, and it's a buttermilk biscuit recipe. However, I never have buttermilk on hand, so I always just do the milk with the lemon juice.
Yep.
Mix. You can also do milk with vinegar. There's a number of different ways to make buttermilk. So follow the biscuit recipe you like. You have a different one.
Yeah, I've always used Marion Cunningham's from the Fanny Farmer baking book, and she's got a recipe for fluffy shortcakes, which she says are light cake-like biscuits, particularly delicious in fruit shortcakes. So that's the one that I use, and I'll put it up there. She says it makes about 16 biscuits. I like to have big biscuits, so it usually ends up making about 10 big ones. But make your own biscuits.
Right.
And then,
well, and here's what I love about the strawberry shortcake is you've got these homemade biscuits and you've got the wonderful strawberries, the whipped cream. So my husband usually only wants about a tablespoon of whipped cream on his strawberry shortcake.
Oh, Booty. I do think a little less of him now that I know that. I hate to say that. I'm glad he doesn't listen to the podcast, but that is a serious shortcoming. It's a strawberry shortcake shortcoming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we digress. Go on.
So we have in our household, the biscuits make, my recipe makes about 9, and there are 4 of us. So we usually have leftover biscuits, even if we give one to Mom.
Mm-hmm.
The whipping cream is never good the next day if we have leftover whipping cream. So this solves that problem. And I originally got it from a recipe that was a limoncello tiramisu that we had for Easter, which is really good, but it does make a lot. So I pretty much halved it. I'll put in a link for the tiramisu recipe if you want to try that. But here's what I did for the cream. So this is instead of just plain whipped cream with sugar and vanilla. 8 ounces of mascarpone cheese, which you can get at Trader Joe's. That's a tub. And then about a cup of lemon curd. And we have our lemon curd recipe from episode 19. And that makes 2 cups. So that's another nice thing is that if you have some leftover lemon curd that you can put in yogurt or whatever. And then you're going to mix that together with about 2 ounces of limoncello and 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. So you're mixing the mascarpone cheese, the lemon curd, the limoncello, the lemon juice. And then separately, you're going to whip about a cup of whipping cream, heavy whipping cream. You want to use the heavy one.
Yep.
and a couple tablespoons of sugar to your taste. And remember, you're going to have a lot of sweetness from the lemon curd. There's a lot of sugar in that as well. So then you're going to fold your whipping cream mixture into your lemon curd mascarpone cheese mixture. And that's it. It's a little bit denser than whipped cream, but it's still nice and light. It has a wonderful infused lemon flavor that goes really well with the strawberries. You could also do it with blueberries or peaches if you're on a diet and you don't want to have the biscuit because you're cutting out carbs.
You're just gonna go for the fat.
You can have just the strawberries and the cream.
So healthy.
The
This is so good. To me, this was like a revelation because, big fan of just the traditional strawberry shortcake, but I made this for I do a final luncheon for the faculty in a program that I oversee, and I thought strawberry shortcake would be great, but then I did this with the cream and everybody just loved it. And when I was making the cream in the morning, I will say you do have to plan a little bit ahead if you're going to use your own lemon curd. You want that to be completely cooled. So I made that the night before. As Booty said, it's never a bad thing to have leftover lemon curd. And then mixed it together with the cream, and everybody just loved it. It just gave this nice twist on the regular whipping cream and worked so well with the fruit. And it was just delicious. I wanted to just eat it without any fruit, because it's, I don't feel that way about whipping cream.
There's something about the mascarpone cheese that just adds and the lemon curd. I mean, oh.
Yeah, and it's a little bit stiffer because of the mascarpone cheese.
And it definitely keeps, I would say, for several days at least, if you have your biscuits and strawberries around that long.
Yeah, no, I mean I had some left over and I was still eating it a couple of days later and it's just delicious. So definitely make this as a late spring twist on the old family favorite of the strawberry shortcake. It's just divine. Well, so Booty, you remember that we are making our way through Anne McDonald's No Idle Hands, A Social History of American Knitting. And we are now up to chapter 7 and chapter 8. So we're still in the 19th century.
Chapter 7 is mid-century knitters, which is mid-19th century.
Yes.
When you think of mid-century modern, that's not this.
That's not this. She's looking at mid-19th century, but sort of what was happening around in knitting from a sort of fashion perspective, besides all of the knitting that happened with the Civil War, which we talked about last time. And chapter 8, which I think is my favorite chapter, is entitled Sporty Victorian Knitters. Which I have to say, when we think about the Victorian era, we don't think of that as a particularly sporty period in American history. But I think some of the themes that we've seen before, we're still seeing. We're still talking about socks, but in a slightly different and sporty way.
Yes, a little more fun, I think. Should we start with first the chapter 7?
Yeah, let's start with chapter 7. And I mean, I do think again it sort of connects with what we've talked before that there is this, I would say, another period of mixed messages for women. On the one hand, they're very active in the war effort. There's this way in which they're getting involved in politics and things like that. And we have the rise of actually women's colleges. But then there's also this counter message of the circle of domesticity. And, women should be sitting home and taking care of the home and not going beyond that. And so it's this push me, pull me moment. And I think the woman, Mrs. Clorinda Nichols of Kansas, she's a member of Kansas's first state constitutional convention demanding women's rights, but she was also always careful to have her knitting on hand as a kind of badge of womanhood. I think this gets exactly. So here she is at this convention pushing for women's rights, but anytime there are people denouncing that effort as strong-minded and unwomanly, she, quote, tended strictly to her knitting as she finished the sock which she was working on before the convention closed. So there's this weird way that knitting is this badge of domesticity that women take with them, and they're taking that badge with them even when they're pushing for something that is dubbed unwomanly. So it's kind of a mixed message there.
What I loved that Susan Strasser wrote this book called Never Done: A History of American Housework.
Yes.
And she points out that, and I had never thought about this before, that with the invention of machines, I guess there were laundry machines, right? At
Well,
this
the rollers, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't like our modern laundry machines, or the ones that I guess in the 1950s that really revolutionized laundry. But as these machines get invented to help with chores, what happens is that women start doing them more often. So it doesn't really get them out of any time. So now instead of cleaning your clothes once a month or something, you're doing it every week or whatever it is. And I feel like, oh, I had not thought about the trap. The standard gets raised.
Yeah, it reminds me, this wasn't in the book, of Oberlin College was the first coeducational college in the United States, and it was founded in 1833. But they had a separate curriculum for women and for men, because women, well, at this time, the men's curriculum was based on a knowledge of Latin and Greek and calculus, and oftentimes women weren't coming to college with a background in those things. So they had a separate curriculum. But at Oberlin, the women did not have classes on Mondays so that they could do the laundry and the mending for the male students.
That's
You can come, but you're going to have to do the laundry and the mending for the men. And you're not going to be reading Latin and Greek. You're going to be reading maybe some Jane Austen. Appropriate.
Well, Jane Austen is good, but
Yes.
you should be able to pick.
Well, and it's funny because we tend to think of Shakespeare now as the curriculum of high culture, but when Shakespeare first gets introduced into high school and college curriculums, it's actually for women and mechanical schools because they didn't have the Latin and the Greek. So they thought, well, we'll have them read Shakespeare. And that's in English. That becomes the English classic. But initially, it was considered popular literature, and men would read the Latin and the Greek. But anyway, we're getting away from knitting a little bit. But I think that those two things capture what's going on for women at the time. Access to education, pushing for political rights, but at the same time, this sense that the circle of domesticity and the woman's sphere is where they belong. And in part because women are considered not capable of, they might become hysterical if too many thoughts.
Hysterical, otherwise known as progressive.
Well, it actually comes from the Greek word for womb, like a hysterectomy is, yeah.
Yeah, it means literally wandering womb.
Yes. The idea was your womb could float up to your brain and take over your brain, and that's why you were hysterical. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and I love there was this quote from Jenny June, whose pseudonym was Jane Crawley. And she said, "The little work tables of women's fingers are the playgrounds of women's fancies, and their knitting needles are the fairy wands by which they transform a whole room into a spirit isle of dreams." I feel like that's what I aspire to when I'm knitting. My little fairy
Playground
wands.
of women's fancies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which that sounds so romantic and wonderful. And here they are knitting socks, and
Yeah.
things that they don't necessarily want to. However, I was fascinated by the cloud.
Yes.
It sounded like it was pretty much a scarf, but you wrapped it several times around your head, and then it had these tassels that flung behind you. Yeah, so when you're going for a ride in your carriage or whatever, your sleigh, you had this beautiful cloud, and it was brightly colored and just framed the face. So.
Yeah, well, and I didn't realize that the rise of industrialization and the mass production of yarn. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted to knit something, you had to produce and spin your own yarn. And now women can buy yarn and it's also much finer. So that allows them to do much more open work, lacy things, and you get this whole sort of head gear thing, which was the cloud, which I thought was such a great term for this poof around
Right.
your
Your head
face,
in
your head in the
the
clouds.
clouds. We had also the titles of patterns: Cap for an Old Lady,
Yes.
Old Lady's Bedroom Slipper, Shawl for an Invalid Old Lady.
Well, and that I did like the where she talked about the reverence for the grandmother ha as the sort of repository for all this knitting knowledge. And apparently this was a very popular picture too. If you wanted to order something for your walls, everybody had a picture of a grandmother teaching a grandchild how to knit. There were a lot of sort of famous domestic scenes, but one of them was the person who really made this famous was Eastman Johnson's portrait of the Hatch family, where they're the grandmother sitting there knitting. I loved that that was a common, and I have seen those pictures of the grandmother with the white curls. I don't know that she would have had the cloud. She would have add the cap for an old lady. I mean, like, who wants to make that? But those were actually the titles of the patterns. I wondered if she had hidden quinine vials in her right here.
In our culture now, we try not to look like a grandma. We try so hard not to look old. This was maybe not a bad thing to be an old lady. That was actually a badge of honor.
Women who didn't dress according to their age were looked down upon, that you needed to embrace your age, that that came with a certain reverence.
Speaking of dressing, we should talk about the Imperial Dress Elevator. So this is a contraption that basically folds up their skirt so they weren't getting so dusty. And it said that, and we can transition to the sporty era, that women could double their exercise without annoyance or the scare of ugliness or eccentricity.
Because that those two things often go hand in hand, ugliness and eccentricity. No. That's not only ugly, it's eccentric. And
Right.
those are two things in the we don't want column.
Well, I think, yeah, it's eccentric and therefore ugly.
Yes.
Right. But speaking of eccentric and socks, the sporty socks were just awesome. We're entering into the era where they're bicycle riding, and you really don't want to be riding a bicycle in a skirt, a big skirt, because, well, it would catch on your chains or wheels or whatever. So now they're wearing these sporty outfits, which include a lovely sock.
Because you need to cover those calves. And this is, I mean, and the bicycle phase goes crazy for about 5 years and then dies down. But this was big. I mean, women had already started to step out of the home. Remember, they're involved in those fundraising fairs, and now they're riding bikes, but with these giant hoop skirts. Even if you have the imperial dress elevator, which was basically, I think, sort of two pieces of elastic that they could pull up the bottoms of their skirts. I thought that Madame Demarest was the innovator of the imperial dress elevator. And she was actually born in New York. She was not French, but this speaks to how much we love anything from Europe. She was born in Saratoga Springs, and I was surprised to learn that her father had a men's hat store. When she was 18, she opened up a woman's hat store, and she noticed her maid using pieces of brown paper to cut out a pattern, and that gave her the idea of using tissue paper to sell patterns for dresses and things to home sewers. So she builds this empire around these patterns that if you went to Joann Fabrics, not that that's open anymore, the little packets where you get that starts with Ellen Demarest.
Right, and you think about what a revolution, because there were some patterns with the directions. We have a few here that I thought were so funny. One is, this is a quick and neat quilt, but not so pretty as the other patterns. It's fast, but not great. And then we have a high bodice, and it says, this pattern is for an ordinary figure, but after one trial, the knitter will find it can be altered to any size. So, first of all, what do they mean by ordinary figure? Then, knit it once, and then you can alter it.
Yeah.
I think I could design a pattern. Basically, you knit it once and then you say good luck, and then make it again if it doesn't.
Yeah. Figure it out. I mean, because again, it's not, things aren't really standardized. They're starting to move towards that. But Swatch and Gage, MacDonald was able to find one reference who's from a knitting book that says, knit a couple of rows and measure it. And that seems to be the earliest reference to that idea of a swatch or a gauge.
And then you have one more that was, when you have knitted it long enough, work up the other side in the same manner and send it to a tailor to be made up. This knitting will not run when cut. So, okay, just make your thing and then send it to a tailor.
Yeah. And even the two stripes of green and purple look very nice. Like where? What?
Wherever you want.
Wherever you want, apparently. Yeah, no, it must have been incredibly frustrating. But before we get off of socks and grandmothers, I did love this one quote, a little poem that said, "Life is a stocking, Grandma says, and yours has just begun. But I am knitting the toe of mine, and my work is almost done." So I love that idea of a grandmother telling her granddaughter that her sock has just begun, but I am knitting the toe of mine, and my work is almost done.
Well, and the leggings that they used were originally designed to protect the silk stocking, from wet and mud. Then they were wearing them for decoration. I have to say, there was one that reminded me of Stephen West's designs. He does a lot of slip stitches, and so it's not exactly color work. It's but that's exactly what they were doing. And I was fascinated that drop stitches were a thing in this era.
Well, and that, yeah, they had this very popular pattern called railroad tracks, which makes sense because railroads are the engine behind all of the economy. That's the thing. But then that would create this little space, and then they could put ribbon in between it and make it very decorative that way.
Well, and one more poem before we move on to our projects. So it's page 171.
I like this poem because it gets at the difference in the generations between the grandma who's spinning her wool and the granddaughter who's spinning the bicycle wheel. Read the first part.
These are verses from The New Woman and Her Grandam. My grandam used to turn her wheel and spin the glistening toe, or knit a sock as she'd sit and rock the cradle to and fro. And when that sock was worn or torn, oh, then with soft spun yarn it was soon made new all through and through, for my grandam, she would darn it.
My grandam's daughters spins the wheel with her glistening toe the whole day long, for she isn't strong, nor she daren't work, you know. But when her wheel of polished steel, with nothing to forewarn it, hits a snag, kerplunk, and gets a punk, why, she's almost sure to darn it.
And darn it is in quotes. So.
Darn it.
Yeah, so that's sort of the original darn it. That's how you darn socks.
Yeah, it's when you hit a snag, you gotta darn it. But I mean, all of this, we mainly talked about the bicycle craze, and that led to bloomers, but there was also croquet and tennis and golf. And this is the beginning of the demise of the shawl and the rise of the sweater, and particularly the golf sweater, because if you think about a shawl, and this is one of the things that always bothered me about a shawl, was I felt like I couldn't really use my arms. And I have that one shawl that I made that's my Jamie shawl from Outlander, the one that I wear when I want Jamie to come out of the woods and sweep me off my feet. But every time I wear that to work, I'm always kind of like, am I not really going to need to move that much today? That I'm just going to be sort of in meetings, sitting at my computer. I always feel like I'm a giant Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is what that
Yes.
would feel like.
I love ponchos for the look of them, and I think they look good on everybody, and they're one size fits all. When you're getting something out of the oven, that's the one that I'm like, oh, poncho's gonna get in there.
There is this movement that women should be physically strong and exercising. I mean, there's also the counter movement that they should just stay at home and not be doing anything too strenuous. But that's really the thing that pushes women's clothing, the sweater, the golf sweater, the stockings, and the bloomers. We talked about those. Did you ever have to wear the bloomers at Springside for gym?
No, I think you were the lucky end of the era of bloomers at our high school. I do remember you having the bloomers.
We had these pinnies, and they were sort of like a smock, and you would wear like a polo shirt underneath it. And then they actually had a sash, and then there were bloomers. I mean, there were actual bloomers. And the whole thing was everybody would get them in sixth grade. And they'd be down to your knees, but you didn't want to buy this thing again. So by the time you were a senior and you were wearing your pinny and your bloomers, they were like mid-thigh.
Right. Well, we're talking cotton. So not any kind of like, oh, that's what I want to work out in is like a poplin cotton.
Yeah. Well, and it had a lot of fabric because it was gathered at the top. You had this sort of yoke, and then it was probably about a yard and a half of fabric around the hem, and you would scoop it up in your sash. It was like a 19th century solution for women exercising. And actually, another woman that I really liked, her name was Abba Wolfson, which is an excellent name. She was a teacher and also an author, and she actually collected a collection of essays by women doctors in the 19th century about the issue of dress reform and how these corsets and things were bad for women's health. But she says, quote, this is on page 160, she prayed for the day when women would emerge from their vast, quote, swaying and undefined and indefinite mass of drapery into the shape which God gave to his human beings, and to agonize over women's tendency to, quote, hide and confuse the contours of this common human form as if they were a disgrace to her.
And you think about, I don't know, who came up with the dress and especially the hoop skirt? Cuckoo crazy.
But it's really women starting to play golf, starting to play tennis. I think croquet was still considered unladylike because you'd sort of split your legs and hit the croquet glove. That ran out of fashion probably because it was eccentric and ugly. Can't have that booty. We cannot have eccentric and ugly. Yeah, that's really what starts moving women away. I mean, the women who go out west, of course, they start to realize how inappropriate the giant hoop skirts are for the prairies. No, I thought it was fascinating. I love learning about this stuff.
Yes.
But, well, Booty, what are you knitting?
Well, I'm closing in on three projects. I'm finishing the sleeve of my cold wing, which I frankly should not take that.
Oh, I like that. That looks really nice. Really like that pattern. Yeah.
That is almost done. And then I have, and that's Goldwing by Jennifer Steingass. And then we have the Mystery Knit Along with Marie Green. It's called Postcards from the Edge. This is with Debbie Frables from the Serial Knitters and Echo Lake Tweed. And
Oh,
it's just
yes.
so yummy. I can't recommend it enough. So we're getting there. It's a very large.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. So it's got sort of like a V.
Yeah, so this was a really fun one. In true knitterly fashion, I should point out that I made some errors, but I managed to get back on track. And I tend not to really focus on those once it's done. While I'm knitting it, I might look at it and be like, I don't, this bugs me. But once it's done,
But it's really pretty. It's got these sort of stripes that go into sort of a V, and it's kind of a raspberry. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Drac Snack, which is a deep red, but because it's on this silk yarn, it's not as dark as it would be on her other bases.
And the stripes are really cool, and it's also got some really nice open work.
Yes, the surprisingly, for once, I didn't really screw up on the, well, I shouldn't say that. I screwed up on one of the lace sections, but I decided that it's not that noticeable. So I'm just
Well,
gonna.
if you wrap it around your head and wear it as a cloud, then you're definitely not going to
Yes.
notice it.
Yes. And then the last one that I am almost done. So I didn't knit a sock, but it is essentially knitting a sock. And the beauty is you only have to make one. Is this adorable little pouch by Hunter Hammerson, and it's called Noteworthy. It's her new pattern. And so it's basically make a little sock, a tube, and then you embroider lines like a piece of paper, and you put in little grommets and a clasp to finish it. And You get a little pouch that looks like a piece of paper. And she says, paper is magic. Admittedly, it's that sort of quiet, everyday magic that's easy to overlook, but it's magic nonetheless. It can be soft enough to protect your most delicate treasures or strong enough to climb on. It can be so ephemeral that you throw it away without a second thought, or it can last for centuries. It can hold your thoughts when nowhere else feels safe and either keep them secret forever or share them with others long after you're gone. Because paper is magic and the right piece of paper can change the world. Now, I am not foolish enough to think that these little bits of knitted paper are going to do any such thing, but I do know that you can turn them into a little pouch for all your secret treasures or use them to display your favorite pins, or if your embroidered penmanship is better than mine, maybe send someone a very special note. And I know they're going to amuse quite a number of you and bring a bit of happy distraction to some folks who need a break from a world that feels increasingly grim. And I know none of that changes the world, but maybe it makes it a tiny bit more comfortable just for one person for just a moment. And that's a kind of magic too.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, she's brilliant. I love her patterns. And I felt like that is exactly what happened when I made it. It was a distraction. I learned to make cast on Judy's magic cast on, and I improved my embroidery skills and just fun.
No, and we've talked about that so many times that it's the power of knitting to take you into its own moment, and that there's beauty in that, that when you want to focus on something else, and sometimes you don't want a big knitting project, and sometimes a project that's it's not a sock, it's not something practical, you're not going to wear it, it's a flight of fancy. I was glad to hear that mom has picked up knitting. Apparently, us saying that repeatedly, that knitting is good for your health, it wasn't until she heard Kim Davis say it that she decided that she should go to the knitting club.
Right.
Mom,
Yep. She has a good friend who is a very proficient knitter. I sat down with her and tried to teach her how to knit. She has knit before in the past, but it was 63 years ago.
Well, and I remember it was a baby blanket, and it was a pretty ambitious project. I mean, it was big, and it was a pretty complicated pattern.
Right. And she was trying to learn just by following directions in a pamphlet or something like that. No YouTube.
So she was kind of knitting from the 19th century. Add bells at the end. Work in a stripe of green and purple. That looks nice.
Exactly. And I think she did a great job. There's a couple of little mistakes where she purled instead of knit or knit instead of purled. But I don't know what happened. The blanket wound up being wonky in shape, like it's not a rectangle. But I don't think that it's the knitting. I think it has to do, maybe she washed it and it was wool and part of it felted or shrunk or something. But anyway, so she's trying again. And the goal here is not to make something. As Kim said, it doesn't matter. It's the process.
Yes, I did really like how Kim focused on that it's the doing of it that is the liberation, and trying to worry about whether you're going to make this sweater that fits is not, I mean, eventually you can get to that if you want, but it's the doing of it. And I feel like Hunter Hammerson totally captured the spirit of that.
Well, and also, well, thank you, Kim Davis, for getting mom to try again 63 years later. But also, we want to give a shout out to Michelle Lee Bernstein, who alerted us to that there is a video on YouTube for the Knit, Knit, Knit song.
Oh, yes.
And it's really funny. Apparently, these musicians are in a yarn store and they have resurrected the knit, knit, knit song. It's not the best sound recording, but now we know what the music sounds like.
Yes. And apparently you can get there is sheet music for it at the Library of Congress. So you can actually get the sheet music for it. And so it was a woman singing and playing a cello and then
Keyboard.
a keyboard.
Yeah. So thank you, Michelle. I'm very thrilled.
Yeah. Well, I'm still working on my bunny because guess what, Booty? I am in the middle of a war. I
Uh-oh.
am waging a battle with four things: bittersweet, sumac, poison ivy, and a grapevine. I have decided that I'm going to clean out this area of the yard. Well, I've only gone out there a couple of times. I spend a lot of time thinking about how I should go out there and whack away these.
Oh, this is
And
wonderful.
researching it. I spent some time
Yes.
researching it on what herbicides, and I got one that said, bittersweet is winning right now. They had some directions that said, be careful when you spray these herbicides because you don't want to kill the host tree. Like if you there was bittersweet growing up an apple tree. Except you know what our bittersweet's growing up? Sumac.
Oh, right.
So that shit's coming down too. It's all coming down. And so then when I got the canopy of the bittersweet that was on top of the sumac, guess what was underneath it? Poison ivy.
Poison
Poison Ivan, as my son used to so famously say. That's poison Ivan. Be careful.
Yeah.
If you get poison Ivan on you, that's not good. I think if Ivan the Terrible had a plant named after him, it would be poison ivy.
Exactly.
So I haven't been doing much knitting because I've been trying to get the yard area in a state of somewhat civilized humanity. You know what it is right out there? It's ugly and eccentric. That's what it is. And it's going down, Booty. It's going down.
I have no doubt that these plants do not stand a chance against you.
Well, they're winning right now. And like I said, I go out for about 20 minutes and I'm like, oh my God.
Well, why are you getting rid of the grapevine? Or are you just trying to cut it back? Grapes are delicious.
Now, all of these are very invasive species. And yeah, and they'll just kind of take over.
Yeah, it's like our blackberry bushes
Yeah.
here.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
there's blackberries there too. Yeah, they're losing actually. The bittersweet is the thing that's sort of taking over the town. So that's my big project these days. But I am fortified by Hunter Hammerson, and I need to go back to the happy place that knitting affords all of us
Have your strawberry shortcake.
with the lemon cream. Get out your pointed sticks and just do some knitting and enjoy. And I think with that, Booty, it's time to say, whatever you do, don't
Don't
knit
knit
like
like
my
my
sister.
sister.
But do check out our website.
Was that our best one?
No.
Oh, okay. I keep hoping. Hope spins the turtle, as my son used to say. And if you can tell a friend or give us a review, we would very much appreciate it.
And definitely let us know if there's things that you've come across. We'll give you a shout out. We love to hear that.
Yes,
And
thank you.
thank you again for listening.